introduce our main speaker, Brandon from San Marcos.
Brandon, alcoholic. Damn, there are a lot of people here. But the good thing is you're all self-centered, so you're probably not going to hear anything I say anyways. So you can go ahead and start thinking about yourselves now. Because that's how I felt. I want to thank Larry for asking me to come out and speak, wherever you are, Larry. I went to a concert last night, so I'm tired. I'm grumpy. And I had to work today and blah, 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 blah. But again, that's I guess, what I've always looked for is for you guys to fix what's always been wrong with me. And I can give you a list of what's been wrong with me from, like, age 5. Oh, and I want to thank the 10-minute speaker as well. That's pretty gnarly. I feel like I'm just, I just drank and I wet the bed. That's all I did. Damn. Like, the end. That's it. So, but I did it more than once. That counts, right? It isn't just once. And I went number 2 too, a couple times as well. I wonder what's going to come out of my mouth tonight. That's the other problem. And then I want to catch it, and it's a little bit too late. But what a privilege it is to be up here and feel somewhat free today on the inside. And it sure in the hell isn't from what I have as far as material stuff. When people talk about the loneliness and the awkwardness and the being the black sheep of the family, that's me from day one. And I have tried to outrun and beat you guys and outmaneuver everything I could possibly, because I've got to be 10 steps ahead of you to feel just equal to you. And I remember that feeling like in elementary school. And I got held back in elementary school, and that was devastating to me. Because I am so insecure and so consumed with myself that when things like that happen, I'm devastated. And then what are you going to think about me? And then you're going to think I'm stupid? I can't have this. And I just lock myself in a room and be quiet. And off to the psychiatrist I go at a very young age. Nothing I've talked about up to this point, I think, has really talked about alcoholism yet. It's just been my story and how I felt when I was young. And I have never been satisfied with anything in my life for a very long period. The way I look, the grades I got in school, to the pair of shoes my mom got me, to the job that I had, to the girls that I've dated, it just, the shine wears off eventually. And I'm looking for something else shiny and bright. And that's followed me well into sobriety as well. And I grew up in a small town up north, and it was a little country town. I worked on dairies and I worked in almond orchards when I was young. I had a blast, man. I never really was able to shine in school because I just... Early on, I had tutors, and they told me that I had learning disabilities, and again, that was something that was very devastating to me. So right out the gate, I'm different. I'm different. I don't think like you guys. My parents didn't bring me up like you guys. I didn't walk like you guys. I didn't feel the way you guys looked right out of the gate. And I'll tell you what, the first time I drank alcohol, I was waiting for that. I had no idea how long I'd been waiting for that. I was probably... God, I was in junior high, and that was probably the first gang I ever joined, and we were the Ninja Turtles. But that was like the time of my life because we had built pallets. What's so funny about that? We were hard, all right. We had built pallets up in this field, and we had tumbleweeds all around it, and we were smoking Newport cigarettes, and we had porn magazines all up hanging inside of it, and we were on top of the world. We were on top of the world, and once we started drinking, we were going to fight everybody in that neighborhood. I miss that, actually. I'm thinking about that right now. But yet, when I got sober, I was freaking out. I was terrified. I mean, I couldn't look anybody in the eye from a very young age because, yeah, again, I'm insecure. And so the way you look at me, like, why'd you look at me like that? When you said hello like I was a burden to you and some, things like that. Like, the storyline that goes along with my head, but you give me a few drinks and it doesn't matter anymore. Like, and that's what a friend of mine describes very easily. He says, when I drink, you guys can be out on that picnic table out there drinking, and I can walk up to you guys. I'd be stark raving sober and just feel disconnected. But yet you throw a few drinks at me, and I see you guys, hey, God, I haven't seen you guys for ages. And that's what alcohol does for me. It alters my perception of reality. And I don't know these things when I come in here. So when I look back and I was new, maybe I felt like I was an alcoholic, but I didn't have the facts about what my condition was and what the illness in the big book talks about. But the phenomenon of craving and this idea that for the last 10 years of my drinking, like I always told myself, I'm done. I mean, I would look my mom in the eyes and I would tell her, she's crying, like, why do you keep doing this to yourself? And I'm like, I'm done. And yet a day later, an hour later, a couple hours later, I'm stark raving sober, and I walk into the liquor store, grab the bottle, and I walk out, and I start drinking all over again. And I can't, again, it gets back to the powerlessness. I can't stop on my own, or else I would not be here. I have a hell of a lot better things to be doing on a Saturday night than be here. And but what I've come to find out is that I really don't. I really don't. Like, I've got a full life today, and it's a result of coming to things like this and learning how to look you in the eye. And learning how to be somewhat content with myself, and slowly getting away from the idea that it's impossible for me to satisfy every single person in this room. Not everybody's going to like me, and can I be okay with that? I mean, that's like the struggle of the lifetime for me. But I get glimpses of it. Like, as long as I'm, like the gentleman talked about, practice these principles and learn how to adopt these into my life, like, as long as I can be somewhat genuine and honest, like, who cares what you think? But again, like, I've been trying to outmaneuver and outperform these people and get you to like me or see me in a certain light from such a young age. Like, it's going to take some time. And alcohol was instant for me. Like, it took the big hurt away immediately. And, I mean, I love alcohol. I really do. It's the magic elixir, and if the consequences wouldn't mount it up, I probably wouldn't be here. It wasn't like, you know, I had wrecked another vehicle or anything like that. It was an internal condition that I just had no more fight left in me. And I remember I was in my garage, and I was just done. I was done with the fight. And I grew up north, and you know, had a lot of tutors, had a lot of psychiatrists when I was younger, and you know, my mom's trying to figure out what's wrong with me, and I'm telling her what's wrong. You know, I know she's obviously not doing it right, and you know, my dad is you know, him and I butt heads from the get go because what I found out today is that I'm exactly like him. You know, I don't let things go. I will let you know my opinion, and it's the right way, and. You know, I had never had a relationship with him before in my entire life. You know, we did, but we had a huge falling out, and you know, it was very difficult. But I do like we all do. Like, I start hanging out with lower companionship. I'm not going to hang out with people that are all put together. And frankly, I didn't like that anyways. Like, I like dark, seedy bars. There's a pool table going on over there, and there's some woman up on the air hockey table, and she's dancing, and the guy closes the door, and it's like 10 o'clock at night, and we're throwing dollar bills up on there, and at the time of our life. You can't smoke in bars, but we're smoking in that bar. And just at that point, like, I don't care about anything whatsoever. You know, I remember coming home, and I'm bouncing off the walls, and my mom's like trying to shake me and ask me what's wrong, and I'm like, just don't. Get away from me. Story of my life. Get away from me. Stop asking me questions. Because then I got to get defensive, you know, and I've got to prove my point. And that's what my sponsor says. Like, you know, you can be wrong, but just suck it up and admit you're wrong. And I I honest to God, like when I think about back then, I don't think I was ever wrong. I don't think I ever said I'm sorry. You know what? I'm sorry. I was wrong. Like those words just didn't come out of my mouth because I was so self-righteous and so arrogant and egocentric. And I'll tell you what, like it comes back today, 9 years later, it's still there. But with the principles, I'm able to keep that somewhat at bay and get to know you, you know, because again, like I'll judge everybody. You know, and just by the way you look, the way you talk, the way you said hi, whatever the case is. And so you know, high school comes around and I just, when I look back on it today, like I really wanted attention, I think is why I acted like that. And so I, you know, would steal the gas card in high school, and we went and bought a whole bunch of booze, and we went to Santa Cruz and had a blast. And my mom worked at the school. And, you know, they ended up catching us, and they were going to expel us, and my mom's just devastated. And again, like, I'm looking at her like, I don't care that you're crying whatsoever. And in sobriety today, like, I have cried more in sobriety than I have in my entire life. Because I was such a shell and a heartless person when I was out there that I hadn't cried or laughed in probably 30 years of my life until I got here. And, you know, it's sad to say, but I that's just the way it was. That's how I felt. Like my feelings were way more important than your feelings by far, and my behavior showed it. You know, so watching my mom cry and me and my dad getting fights and my dad saying, "Get the hell out of the house. We don't want you here anymore." And I'm like, "You're gonna let him do that to me?" And just manipulate both sides of the family and really, like when I first got sober, I was like, my family's sick and they're twisted, but like I was the one that was causing it all. And, you know, my dad's got his issues and things like that, but the rules don't apply to me. Ever. Ever. And you know, like, I come in today, like, I find that stuff out today, but before, like, I drink too much. You know, I drink too much and wake up and God knows where, doing God knows what with people that I didn't even know. And that wasn't the plan when I started drinking that night. You know, I was going to be in bed by 10 o'clock. And 11 o'clock rolls around, 12 o'clock rolls around. Then I'm in the car and we're going God knows where to wherever we end up. And, you know, so I eventually, you know, get some trouble up north. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of this town. It's this town. It's got these dairies and these orchards and all these hicks. And I got to get out of here. So I boogie down here to San Diego. And this is going to fix me. Oh, the beaches and the women and the booze and the bars and I didn't even really go to them that much actually. I stayed at home and drank until I got kicked out of bars and if you guys know where the West End is at over there in PB on the edge of PB, I used to go to the West End all the time and got kicked out of there numerous times and like when I tell these stories I pride myself on stupid stuff like that. Like yes I did do that. Yes I broke into that house. You know, yes I told my mom to, you know, F off, and then I don't care, and I've got my middle fingers in the air, and she's crying. But like, I would tell my friends that type of stuff, and I like it was, I don't know why, the hell I would think that, but that's just how I felt, you know. So, you know, I've got this job down here in San Diego, and you know, I can't stop drinking at night, you know. Like I would get off work, and we would go play horseshoes down at the beach, and you know, I would drink and got to the point where I drink until I literally passed out. And I wake up with you know, bottles in my lap, and I'd be passed out on the lawn. I'd be passed out in the recliner, and you know, I'd be spilling the bottle, whatever the case was. But, like, I couldn't. I was so terrified to go to sleep without a drink or anything. I couldn't. I couldn't go to sleep without drinking. And these are the small things today that I really cherish in sobriety is being able to get a good night's sleep. You know, and realizing, like, when I put my head to the pillow, like, I'm going to wake up probably in that same bed. You know, I actually don't. Yeah, wet bed. Are you judging me? My gosh. You know, so I get to a point where people are starting saying stuff again. You know, I'm overshooting the mark and, like, I remember I end up in the office. They're like, you know what, Brandon? We've seen your behavior change, and you're angry. That was my nickname. I had the angry ball of hate. That was, and I prided myself on that. I'm the angry, yes, I am the angry ball of hate. And and they're like, you know, is there anything we can do? You know, we've got this program. And I'm like, absolutely not. So I called this program and, you know, gave the list 20 questions. And I'm like, I'm devastated they're even asking me these questions. And I'm like, no. And I got off the phone. I went right down the beach and got some tall cans and did what I do. And, you know, like I look back on all that type of stuff. I'm like, I was just so blind to it all because I didn't want to hear it. I just didn't want to hear it. I don't want to hear most stuff, quite honest. You know, I mean, if it's not my idea, then it's probably not a good idea. You know, because my head tells me that my ideas blow your ideas out of the water. With everything. I mean, with how we can drive sales at work, to how I can make this meeting better, to, you know, whatever the case may be. And that's absolutely delusional that I don't even have a college degree. And I think I've, you know, can do these types of things, which, I mean, that doesn't really matter either. But so I move into this house and you know, they're selling drugs or selling coke on the top floor. The second level, he's selling pills, and then the bottom is where I'm at, and this guy's selling weed, and the front door is always open, and there's just all kinds of stuff going on in that house. And again, like, I thrived on that environment. I loved it. I loved it. And staying up all night long, when I look back on all that stuff, I'm like, damn, what the hell was I thinking? Like, I really thought these guys were actually my friends, but the only common thing we had together was the booze. That was it. I mean, I didn't know anything about these guys as far as a personal life. And when I look back on all that, like, I don't even know who the hell my mom and dad really were, where they came from. I know nothing about anybody because I don't care about you. Why would I want to ask about how your childhood was and, you know, how things were with dinner with your wife last night, or, you know, how's things going with the job? Like, I don't care about that type of stuff whatsoever. So eventually I get out of that house and I move into a different house, and that's pretty much where my drinking ended. You know, I at this point people are pissed off at me, you know, and I'm waking up and the coffee table's broken and the TV's kicked in, and I have no idea how any of that stuff happened. And, you know, my roommate was like, you got to get out of here. You're just, once you start drinking, God knows what the hell you're going to do. And, again, like, I guess I was somewhat ashamed of it, but I was like, well, that's just what happens. You know, that's just what happens. And at the end there, like, I had no drive to want to go to a bar. I had no drive to want to go out and be around people. I would open the garage, and I would sit in that garage, and it would be pitch black. And I would drink and listen to Alice in Chains and smoke a buttload of cigarettes. And that was like really what I wanted. Just wanted to be left alone. And I kind of got to the point where I was like, if I die like this, that's just the way it's going to be. And because nobody understands me anyways, damn it. So I'll just be left alone to curl up in a ball. And, you know, so... I do that for a few more years, and I'll tell you what, like, really what happened was I finally got to a point where I was looking at myself in the mirror going, damn, is this really what my life is? Is this really what my life is? You know, I've got these speed bumps all over my face, and I look like crap, and I'm not eating, and I can't sleep, and I remember, like, the loneliness that I had on the inside of my gut when I was sober was just sickening. And before I get here, nobody understands how that feels. Hell, nobody understands when I'm new and I got 2 days and I just feel like these walls are just coming in and the ceiling's coming in and I can't take a deep breath and, like, the anxiety is just I'm going to die right here in a meeting. My heart's just going to explode. Nobody knows how that feels. You know, and like, it's... That's the selfishness, self-centeredness the book talks about. You know, that I'm uniquely different than you are. And that's what's really going to end up killing me. You know, and even today, you know, I had to get up at 5 and I had to go to work and I was up late and I had to work in refrigeration today and I had to commute. And other people do that too. But my head will blow that way out of proportion and make it seem like I have a really rough life today. And I'm just so busy. And the first thing that I want to get rid of is AA. I'm not going to get rid of the job. I'm not going to get rid of her. I'm not going to get rid of that car. It's going to be AA. And I've watched plenty of guys do it. I'm just glad I've trained my feet enough to realize like I got to show up to here. Because this is what gave me a decent life. So, you know, at the end of it all, like I always say, like, if you drink long enough, it will take away your self-respect. It'll take away any dignity you think you may or may not have. It'll take away any morals you think you may have. For me, it did. And I come here a shell of a man. Can't look in the eye, staring at the ground. And the loneliness is killing me. And it's going to be like this forever. And I can't go on like this at all. And so I found a couple guys that were serious about this and were in the work and they had a spiritual awakening and I came here for about 30 days. I'm like, this is not me whatsoever. And I went out there and tried once again and I couldn't do it. Like I couldn't stop on my own. So I told my grand sponsor, I was like, look, I don't have anything to do or I don't have anything to give anymore. Like I'm done. What do I do? And he gave me some writing assignments and some phone numbers and said, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm like, that's it? Like, come on, I'm Brandon here. I need more help than that. And he's like, you're just like everybody else here. It doesn't really matter. Like, you're suffering from alcoholism. And if you went out of it bad enough, you're going to do what we do because... If not, there's plenty of misery out there to be given back to you if you'd like that. And when I look back today, like that's I didn't want that. I knew what that had for me, and I didn't want anything to do with it. And so, he was very adamant about getting into the work, and getting into the work quick, and giving this thing back. And you know, when I look back on all that, like the first three steps, we just blew right through. Like. I definitely understood the powerlessness in step one, like, and because of that, it made my life unmanageable, which means many times in sobriety, I couldn't walk out the front door. I was terrified. To open the mail, terrified. And, like, I would have to, like, get called out, like, hey, we're going to come pick you up, be outside, and we're going to go to this meeting or whatever the case was, And that was me at the beginning. So it was like, it was meetings, work, and a buttload of cigarettes. And that was it. Like, to go out to dinner, there was no way I was going to go sit at a table with you guys and talk. Because you guys were all smiling, and I was just miserable. A good 30 days, 60 days in sobriety, miserable. And so, you know, by the time we blew through the first three steps, and then I got to the inventory. And the inventory was something that I was terrified of. Because I've got secrets. And I have dedicated my life to the image that I've created. And the steps crushed it. And I spent so long building it up. Damn it. And it still comes back today. Depending on how my mood is. You know, my hat will get a little bit lower. I may button the top button and you know, put my mean mugging face on. It depends on my attitude. It's still there, but thank God, like the steps have shown me a way out. Like, stop, Brandon, you're acting. That's not you. You know, and then I got into the amends process, and I never liked my sister from the get go, because she was smarter than me, and she stayed out of trouble. And she went to church, and she got a college degree. And I think one of the biggest things, and it's embarrassing for me to say, but it's because I thought she was a lesbian when we were growing up, and I was devastated at that. And completely embarrassed. So I disowned her, pretty much. And so when we went back to the amends, and I sat down with her, and through the inventory, all this stuff came out, and... you know, I think it was like 3 years. She couldn't even answer my phone calls. Like, I made the amends, and she was out the door, and I would call her, and she wouldn't pick the phone up. My sponsor was like, just keep calling her as long as she's not telling you to leave her alone. keep calling her. So we would have like these 2-minute conversations. And, you know, she came down like maybe 3 years in sobriety, and she came down to visit me down here. And before she left, she was like, "Where the hell have you been my entire life?" And I'll tell you what, like, that was really, you know, tugging at my heartstrings for sure. Cause that's how much resentment and self-righteousness I will develop to just, I don't care about you. Cause you're going to embarrass me. Like, that's, again, my feelings are way more important than hers. I have no idea the things I said to her and the physical abuse I caused her when we were younger. Like, I don't think about that type of stuff when I'm out there. Look what you did to me. And I was able to sit down and, you know, we have a great relationship today. I love her dearly. And that's not me. That's through sponsorship. That's the steps. And you know, God's got to be in some part of that somewhere. I don't know where, but he's in there somewhere. Or she's in there somewhere. And the same with my father. You know, they had some issues with their marriage early on, and I got pissed off at him about that, and he accused me of some things of when I was in high school that I was pretty pissed off about, really pissed off about, and so we would go to family therapy, and the therapist was like, "Do you have any?" And I'm like, "I can't even look at the man. He's not my father." Blah blah blah, all this stuff, and so through the step work, we identify this type of stuff, and I go back and I'm like, "Look, I used to take your car, take your money. I have no idea how it feels to be a father and sit home, even a mom to sit home at night and wonder if their kid's going to come home or not." Like, I don't even have any idea what kind of mental, emotional damage that would cause mom and dad to sit there and be like, "I wonder if we're going to get a phone call tonight." And again, I don't care. You know what the crappy thing is today? Now I care. But I think that's what made me feel like somewhat of a human being today. I did not feel like a human when I was here early on. Not at all. I am from a different planet, and I can't identify with anybody. And the steps have brought me, like you talked about, to the middle of the circle, to the middle of the herd. And you know, there was a couple other amends that I made that I owed some money back, and I remember my old roommate, he was like, "Oh, I'm gonna go buy a big sack when you give me that money," and I'm telling my sponsor, I'm like, "He's gonna go buy drugs, I'm not gonna give him this." He's like, "You're cleaning your side of the street. It doesn't matter what he does with the money." So I meet him in the parking lot. He's high as a kite. And I'm like, "Here you go. I make the amends." And off he goes to do what he does. And And so I get to the preceding steps. And, you know, I get quiet. Meditation. I get on my knees and I pray. That changes from time to time. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, but I, the actions are extremely important to me. And and step 12 is what I was able to give back. And practicing these principles in all my affairs, like those amends that I made, you know, these living amends today, like I was probably like 6-7 years in sobriety, and my mom, every once in a while she would call and she's like, "Are you all right? Is everything okay?" And I'm like, "I'm fine." And I would get kind of upset and start to raise my voice at her, and she's had to worry about me from day one. So to think that she's just going to think I've been sober for a short amount of time, my behavior changed, like she still worries about me, and today it's different. But I had a hard time with that. My sponsor's like, "Look, you have brought emotional distress to her since you were a little kid. You know, like diagnosed with depression at a very young age, and she's just worried about you." And again, like, I don't want to hear that type of stuff, but that's the truth. And so, you know, being able to go back and give this thing back has been probably one of the biggest fruits of the program I've ever experienced in my entire life, because now I sit on the other side and I take guys through the steps and I listen to how damn unique they are. And sometimes I'm able to tell them, other guys that are very, very sensitive and have had traumatic upbringings that I, you know, I, for me, I've kind of had to cater to each individual for what they have going on. But what I don't, I tell them the truth about what they've got going on or what they're acting like. And, you know, we sit down, and I'll tell you what, like, I still chase this shiny stuff. You know, I'm checking my bank account, and I'm wanting to get a new car, and I'm wanting to buy a house, and I will think that stuff's going to bring me some happiness and fill that void that I have inside. But I can obviously say, like, through my experience, once I get there, it's not going to be good enough. And the house has got to be bigger. The rims have got to be bigger. You know, the paychecks have got to be bigger. She was good for a short amount of time, but, you know, she's kind of starting to annoy me. So there's got to be another one. And so it's on and on with everything in my life. So once I'm able to sit down with a guy and go through the step work with him, it brings me back to why I'm actually here. I think, in my opinion, of why I'm really here. And it's to begin to learn how to build the best possible relationship with every human being I come in contact with, which I fall short of every single day of my life. Because I'm still judgmental, I'm still arrogant, self-righteous. It's just been put at bay with the steps and the ability to have whatever God is in my life. But out of all that stuff, it's been an inside job. It really has been an inside job through the inventory to the amends to be able to sit down with guys and say, okay, look, this is, you're actually scared. You know, you were running and gunning, but you're actually scared. And you're scared of losing what you have or not getting what you want. And it will make you act out in all these different types of behaviors that you've been doing. And these guys are like floored, like, I never saw it coming like that, ever. Because, see, I'm so emotionally tied to my story that my version of it is completely different than what someone that's not emotionally tied to it. And that's where a sponsor and a sponsee relationship has been crucial for me to realize, like, look, they're not emotionally tied to it, so they see the truth for me. Like, my mind will distort things very easily. And, you know, it's... You get these guys going and you see like the dead man walking when they come in here, and then you see them turn around and they get jobs and they go to meetings and they get commitments and they start to share a little bit and they realize that they're no different than anybody else here. We're all trying to get along in this game of life and this world is cruel sometimes. You know, but my reactions to it today have changed. I'm not so reactionary. I have got a lot of direction with just like, Brandon, leave it alone. Keep your mouth shut. At work, at home, in relationships, just keep your mouth shut and, you know, treat her good. Call your sister and say hi. Just do what your boss asks. And that's tough. Because again, like I've got a head that's always thinking about a better way, an easier way. You know, I can maybe just lay on the couch, and this money's just gonna fall through the chimney and just gonna come about. But that's not how life is, and that's not how happiness is either. I've been chasing that stuff for many, many years, and what I found out is that I'll never get there. I'll never get there. So I don't know. How much time do I have? 15 minutes. Damn. So again, like, what my life looks like today, and what I'm trying to do is be more of an example than running things, you know, through my mouth. And I've been able to get a couple raises at work and new positions there, and you know, again, like, I can't believe how much I would want to resort back to just like, I give up. I just don't want to do this anymore with a lot of stuff. But the thing you guys have shown me and my sponsors showed me is like, look, anything good and decent in my life has taken work to get. And you know, I don't want to have to work that hard for it. But I mean, what's the alternative? Really, today, I have put so much work in trying to rebuild these relationships and pay these people back God, I don't want to die drunk. I don't want to die with the wreckage that I had on my conscience when I first got in here. Because I remember laying in the hospital, and the doctor's like, you know, do you do drugs? Have you been drinking at all? And I'm like, you know, no, I do not do that type of stuff. Like, appalled that someone would ask me something like that. I've been up for days, and I had anxiety. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. And you know, my mom's in there, and she's not saying anything, because she's very, very, not naive, but she's just a really, really kind woman. And you know, again, she doesn't want to hurt me. And so she was in there just crying, and like, I don't even care. I just, can you get her out of here, doctor? Like, I need to calm down. And, you know, I talked to her on the way home tonight, or on the way over here tonight. And, you know, my grandma's not doing that well, and she's kind of getting emotional, and you know, she's like, it's hard to see. It's her mom, and she's like, it's hard to see, you know, grandma like that. Like, she used to be so strong, and she was a teacher, and she would take care of things around the house. And my grandpa's passed now, and just the ability to be there and listen to her and just let her know, hey, mom, you're just there to help her out. You know how lucky you are to see that you know, she hasn't died in a car accident, you never got to say goodbye, or whatever the case is. Like, there's going to be all kinds of tragic things that are going to happen in my life. You know, I've been to funerals, and I've been to weddings. But all that type of stuff, what it's really done is been able to make me feel like a human being and make me feel like I'm a part of this life called humanity, which is not how I've felt most of my life. And just because I've been sober for 9 years does not mean I have been an idiot and done some stupid things and damn near got arrested and not have drank for, like, you know, 8 years. And what I'm trying to say is I wish just drinking a buttload of booze was my problem. But it's not. That is just the beginning of the tip of the iceberg of what I have going on with myself. You know, I'm delusional, driven by 100 forms of fears and self-delusions. That's what's going on. And I don't necessarily always see that, and that's why I need people that are somewhat sane in my life to point that out, being, Brandon, you are way off base. You know, you show up, you say what you're going to do. You're honest, and when you do lie, you come about it, because that guilt gets inside of me now, and I've got to tell the truth when I lie, because I still do lie about stupid stuff. What'd you do today, Brandon? Oh, well, I went to the gym, and I, you know, took a hike, and I'm like, no, actually, I just went to work and I came home, and I just want to make it sound like I had an interesting day, but that's not really what was going on. But, like, again, all this stuff is about awareness for me today. Like, I'm not aware that's how I behave 28 years of my life, 30 years of my life before I get here. And what's made that possible is I cleared away the wreckage. I've got a clear conscience today to be like, look, when I do something wrong, it bothers me in here, and I'll lose sleep over it. And my sponsor says it very, very simply. He's like, you can either go through sobriety with a shield and a sword, defending everything you do, or you can go through it with a broom and a dustpan, cleaning it up as you go. And I try to clean it up as I go. And when I'm able to do that and swallow my pride and realize I do screw up, even though I've been sober for a very short amount of time, that it brings me back down to ground level. Like, I'm not unique. And what happens is, when I do keep secrets or I'm not doing what's asked, that uniqueness comes back into my life. Maybe I don't need to come in here to this. You know, maybe I can leave work a little bit early. Maybe I could take these little bit longer breaks. And that stuff will creep in. It always creeps in. Like, resting on my laurels, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, being in the middle of this thing and being letting guys know that that's what's really going on has been crucial. Because what happens, I'll stop looking in the eyes of the people that really know who I am and just saying, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's all right. But yet I could be dying on the inside. And, you know, I have no idea why the hell I'm still here, and I've had to go to a couple funerals, you know, and I don't know why You know, I don't know why a lot of stuff goes on in this world. And it's not my job. Before, I thought it was my job. Like, I have put so much stress on myself and on other people to live up these certain expectations. Everybody fails it. My dad, my grandma, my mom, they've all got to be up here. They're human beings. They are flawed just like I am. You know, they've got envy and lust and pride and greed and all the same damn things I suffer from on a daily basis if I don't address them with the steps. And, you know, again, when I'm able to get honest with that and be genuine about that, there is nothing special about my life whatsoever. But I'm absolutely grateful to even sit up here and actually say that. And you know, again, like, whether you guys believe me or not, like, it's not my business. None of my business. But at least I can put my head to the pillow tonight and be like, I did the best damn job I could today, and tomorrow hopefully I'll get another chance to do it. And, you know, at the end of this life, whenever that may be, I can die with a clean conscience, and I know my father knows how I feel about him today. My sister knows how I feel about her today. There are no stones unturned in those relationships. And behind all that is a very, very freeing experience on the inside that you can't give me, that a car can't give me, that a girlfriend can't give me, that a certain amount of money in the bank account can't, well, maybe a certain amount of money in the bank account could possibly give that to me, but like all the stuff, the self-respect and the dignity and the character and the morals that alcohol took away from me, it slowly started to be instilled back into me and to make me feel like I have something to give. And it's through the work. It's through nothing buying anything. It's through, you know, getting honest, getting real, and pretty much just giving you my time. That's it. And sometimes you guys want to hear my opinion, and other times they just want to be heard. And I'm not here to fix everything, you know, or tell you what's wrong. Depending on the day, I may have to tell some employees about that, but other than that, it's none of my business. And again, like, when I do that, I can be okay. And in my entire life, I have never been okay. And it's because of the guys that have walked before me, the women that have walked before me to show me how to be somewhat a decent human being so I can hold my head up and look myself in the mirror and be like, look, this is really who I am. I ain't got a damn thing to hide. And people aren't going to like it, and people aren't going to agree with it, but as long as I can be okay and like talks about to be true to myself, that's the only thing that matters. And I have found that through the steps and through, you know, God and gentlemen that carry themselves at a much higher rate than what I do, but I'm trying to strive towards that, and when I screw it up, I try to just clean it up. Simply, that's it, because I will screw it up, absolutely. And again, I appreciate for the opportunity, and wish you guys all the best on this journey that we call life. Thank you.